Coming to you across the ether at the speed of light is the Mortgage Moment with Mark Wells and Kerry Deese of Preferred Financial Services. Join us for the next hour. We're going to talk about banks, mortgage banks, and mortgage brokers. So, Kerry, when someone's ready to get a mortgage, they've really got several choices they can make. In fact, the market provides the consumer with three potential sources you can go to for a mortgage loan. That's a bank, a mortgage bank, and a mortgage broker. So we're going to talk about those three platforms, the pros and cons of each. And here's a bias alert. We're a mortgage broker.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
So we'll try not to just disparage the other platforms, but we picked our platform because we do believe it's the best one to work from. But let's talk about the structure of each of those three institutions, a bank, a mortgage bank, and then we'll talk about mortgage brokers in the last section of our program. For most of us, really, a bank may be the first place that would come to mind when we need a loan, when we need a mortgage loan. And in the more distant past, really prior to, say, 1990 or so, virtually all mortgages were made either by banks or savings and loans. There really were no independent mortgage brokers operating in the standard mortgage market. So let's talk about the banks and what are some of the characteristics of bank lending. Kerry, what distinguishes a bank in how they manage their mortgage process?
One of the biggest things is that the risk that they take on, because they're actually lending their own money.
Okay, that's absolutely correct. Lending their own money, can they set their own terms?
Absolutely.
How they lend that money? They can't.
Yep.
That's right.
And they underwrite their own loan, so it's their final decision about whether you qualify.
That's right. So their decision, as far as their institution goes, is final. If their underwriter says yes, it's good. If they say no, there's no appeal. You just have to move on. And since banks are at risk in the transaction because they are lending their own money, what we find is that there's just a sort of an inherent relationship that comes out of that. And that is when you're, and you may have experienced it before, you're sitting at the bank, you're sitting across the desk from the bank officer, and you feel like, why do I feel a little bit adversarial here? Well, the reason you may feel that way is that the bank officer has to assess you from a risk standpoint. In other words, the core question that they have to ask in considering whether to give you a mortgage or not is, why should we not lend this person a few hundred thousand dollars? You know, I had somebody one time kind of complain about all the documentation we do, all the things we have to do. And
just one person, one time?
Well, yeah, well, you know, the generic everyman says the same thing. And I was sitting at a closing one time. We were signing, as you know, hundreds of pieces of paper, and the client says, you know, I may as well give them a blood sample and my DNA, you know, to get this loan, which is how everybody feels. And the attorney said something that's always stuck with me. He said, well, what if you had $250,000 in your bank account and somebody came along to you and said, hey, would you loan me $250,000? What would you want to know about that person? And that kind of puts a perspective on it. If you were at risk, you'd be asking a lot of questions too. If you were at risk and lending your own money, you also would be assessing risk. It's not that the banks are wrong in this. It's not that there's anything subversive in that. That's just their business, but that's what they have to do. They have to assess risk. So inherently, they ask the question, why should we, what are the reasons we should not lend someone the money? So that's why you may feel a little bit uncomfortable across the desk. You may feel like you're kind of under a good bit of scrutiny. You may even walk away with a yes answer feeling like somehow the bank has done you a big favor to lend you money. Now, in reality, the bank's business platform, if they don't lend money, they go down the tubes.
Mm-hmm.
So you're really their customer, and they really do need you in their lobby and across the desk from them. But you kind of leave the meeting feeling like maybe they've done you a big favor. Well, all of that, again, is just because the bank is scrutinizing you and your situation to see what are there any reasons here that we should not lend money. So instead of walking away sometimes feeling like a customer, you don't always get that feeling. So it's just the nature of the relationship. The bank's protecting its own interests. It looks out for its own well-being. It has to. That's how they stay in business. And you, the borrower, represent a potential risk to their interests. So the bank has to scrutinize you. That's why it does feel adversarial. So, Carrie, that person's the bank that you're sitting across the desk from. Does he have the capacity to make the final loan decision? Is he going to be the one who says yes or no?
No, that responsibility actually goes to the bank's underwriter.
So even if you're there talking to a bank officer, there's still a process behind the mortgage loan process,
right,
in which an underwriter, that's someone independent from the bank officer, is going to have to say yes or no on this mortgage loan. And again, Carrie, if the banker's underwriter has decided, no, this doesn't work for us, where does that leave you?
Well, it kind of leaves you needing to find a new lender.
Right, because, you know, there's basically no way to appeal back to the underwriter. And even if the loan officer wants to help you at that point, he's a little bit hamstrung. He's got to go based on the decision of the bank's underwriter. And if the bank does approve the loan, okay, because, I mean, in many instances, you're credit worthy, everything looks fine, they are going to approve your loan. It's generally expected, I think, by most consumers that one of the advantages in going to the bank is that the bank is going to make the loan and the bank is going to hold your loan until it's paid off. Is that always the case, Carrie?
No, a lot of times it gets sold pretty quickly after your closing.
Yeah, let me explain to our listeners how the mortgage system works. Years and years ago, right after the Second World War, there was a huge boom in housing. Veterans were coming back from years at war. There was a baby boom that followed. Everybody who had delayed getting married got married. We had a tremendous housing boom, and the mortgage lending at that time was done mainly by community banks and community savings and loans. And here's what would happen. The bank or the savings and loan in a local town might have had $10 million worth of deposits. Well, that means they've got about $9 million that they can actually lend. Well, in a housing boom, they may have loaned out all of their money, and then all of a sudden they could not lend anymore. And this was causing tremendous liquidity issues in the mortgage market. There were willing buyers, willing sellers, but basically there was no access to financing because the funds were used up already. So the government had two agencies. One was called Fannie Mae, and it administered to the federally chartered banks. The other was Freddie Mac, that administered to the federally chartered savings and loans. And those institutions were, those government institutions were given the charge to be able to purchase loans from the banks or from the savings and loans. And in purchasing the loans off their books, it restored the liquidity of the bank or the savings and loan. And that kept the wheels greased. That kept the money flowing. So originally, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were government agencies designed to keep liquidity in the mortgage market. However, when Reagan came along, he privatized Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. He spun them off as private corporations, but their charter was still to purchase mortgage loans. And so most banks, no matter how big they are, will, once they have booked a number of mortgages, will bundle those mortgages together, sell them off to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And in that sale, sometimes the bank will retain the servicing, so you still deal with the bank that you made the loan at. But quite often, the servicing rights go with the sale, and your loan is picked up by another bank. Now, as you may have experienced, that doesn't affect the terms of your loan, but it does affect who you make the payment to. So you may have started out with a bank thinking you might stay with them, and you find yourself with some bank you may have never heard of, or just a servicing company servicing the loan. So when we get back, we'll finish up on the bank platform and touch on the other mortgage lending platforms. Join us.
Welcome back on this good Saturday morning. Today, we're talking about the differences between mortgage banks, and mortgage brokers. As always, if you have questions, you can call us at 864-235-9596. Email us at themortgagemoment@gmail.com or catch any of our past shows on our website at preferredfinancialgreenville.com.
Thanks, Carrie. We were talking about the three different lending platforms. And again, a bias alert here. We operate a mortgage broker platform, so we do insert some bias into our assessment of things. Banks are absolutely legitimate lending platforms, and there's no worries in terms of going to a bank. But you may find that the experience leaves you a little bit feeling like you're not quite a customer. Maybe you're more like in an uncomfortable or adversarial relationship. And we talked about how that's because the bank has to look at you from a risk perspective, has to ask the question, why should we not lend you this money? And sometimes you come away from that experience not quite feeling like you were really the customer. People often say they use a bank because they want their loan to be with one institution. They don't want to fool with their loan being sold. But we were explaining before the break how all banks, in order to keep liquidity, will bundle and sell their mortgages through the Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac system. And so most everyone out there has had the experience of starting their loan out with a local bank or a national bank and finding maybe a year later, maybe 2-3 years later, it gets sold to someone else. That just happens, is going to happen with anyone who books a mortgage loan. Your loan is a sellable commodity and probably in the end will be sold back and forth a few times in the life of the loan. I've also had another matter that consumers will bring up to me in wanting to use a bank, and they always say, well, what if I go with some company I don't know about and they lose my loan? And I've had that come up quite a few times. Well, I tell them, you know what? The best thing in the world would be for them to lose your loan because then you don't owe them any money. So there's a little bit of a misconception there. Your loan is an asset to the person who loaned you the money because they're going to collect all that interest. So believe me, the chances of somebody losing your loan are like between slim and none, but most likely none because they want you to hang in there and make that payment. So you don't need to worry about anyone losing your mortgage loan. Let's talk a minute about mortgage banks then. A mortgage bank kind of walks like a bank in some respects, acts like a bank, but in every sense of the word is not a bank. That it is, it's not a depository institution. So there are companies that charter themselves as mortgage banking entities. That's a special license category. And a mortgage bank is a company that is in business simply to do mortgage lending. They don't receive deposits. They don't do car loans. They don't do personal loans. They don't do all the other services that banks offer. They strictly are in the business to loan money on mortgages. Some of these are some of the larger mortgage lending entities in the country. Back before the crash, Countrywide was the biggest mortgage lender in the country, and it was a mortgage bank. And in our day and time, Quicken is the same way. They're a very large corporation. They're chartered to lend on mortgages, but they're a mortgage bank. So let's talk about how a mortgage bank works. Carrie, they're similar to a bank in what way?
They are also lending their own money. They assess their own risk and underwrite their own loans.
Okay.
But in the end, they still sell their loans to Fannie and Freddie.
Okay. And they also, because they are initially funding the loan out of their own money, and they may keep that loan a month, they may keep it 6 months, but most mortgage banking companies do sell very quickly to Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. But because they're lending their own money in the beginning, they also have to scrutinize the borrower as a risk. So when you enter into a mortgage relationship with a mortgage bank, you're going to tend to encounter the same mindset. You are going to be risk assessed. You're going to be scrutinized. You may end up feeling a little bit uncomfortable about that. You may feel like you get to some stage in the mortgage loan where you just need some help or some explanations, which, you know, may not come across in a satisfactory way because, again, they have to do what they do, and that is they have to assess risk. And so rather than approaching a potential blip in a loan as an opportunity to solve the issue, sometimes that blip in the road is a reason to terminate the application. And that can leave you stranded. This same discomfort, the same kind of adversarial feeling can arise from the same reason that you might feel that way with a banking institution, and that is risk assessment. And, Carrie, what happens if the mortgage bank turns you down? What are your options there?
Well, usually it's the same as a bank. You don't have any other options with that mortgage bank.
Okay. So I think probably people intersect the mortgage banking industry in this day and time more with the online system of somebody like Quicken. And again, in their advertisements, you know, they talk about the ease of lending. They talk about these instant approvals. What do you think, Carrie, about Quicken saying, hey, send us your information, you got a loan approval in 8 minutes?
Well, I think that's not very accurate information.
Yeah, and it can't really be accurate information because the actual validation of the information that they're using has not been made yet. It hasn't been looked at by the underwriter. You don't have an appraisal. You don't have title work. You don't have all of the other things that go together in a loan. And effectively what they're giving you is a pre-approval.
Mm-hmm.
That pre-approval, again, is something that any broker, any bank, any mortgage bank can do. Because of the presence of the automated underwriting systems, we can all tell you whether, based on the information you've given us, your loan is pre-approved, but no one is going to get an 8-minute loan approval. And so you should not expect that from these platforms. The other thing that, at least from what I hear from consumers, is kind of typically what you would expect. There are not only efficiencies that are lost, but a kind of a depersonalization of a process where you have a company doing massive amounts of transactions every day.
Right.
It's hard to get that one-on-one feeling, that feeling that the person on the other end of the line is there to help you. You're kind of a small fish in a big ocean. And if your loan falls through, it doesn't matter so much to them because they got three more behind you. So, you know, again, all of those experiences, I think, would tend to be discouraging. At least we have and kind of have a lot of mortgage bank fallouts come to us.
We do.
Who have had the experience of trying to go that route, being told up front, hey, everything's fine. And then you reach the normal snags in a loan process. And there are plenty of places where you can reach snags. Carrie, I would say, you know, one of those potential snags. So you've told Quicken, hey, I've got my down payment in the bank. But then what's the snag you might hit? Yeah, you got into the bank, but what?
Well, you could have some deposits in there that we need to source.
That's right. So, yeah, you got the money in the bank, but one of the underwriting processes that is critical is, okay, well, where did the money come from?
Oh, well, I had $10,000 cash in my safe at home.
Right. And that doesn't pass muster, and all of a sudden that nice loan approval you got turns into, well, we can't do this. Your down payment funds are not legitimately sourced. So what sounds easy is not always easy. With each program has its own guidelines. And the person you're talking to on the chat system or the telephone, you know, they're kind of trained to take information, but probably don't have a lot of extensive information on actual underwriting guidelines. They're relying on their automated systems, and that doesn't always tell us everything.
We get a lot of clients that call in and say, you know, they've felt like a number. You know, it feels like they're calling into a call center, and it takes several days to get a response. So any question takes days and days to resolve.
Right.
And then they're told they're going to closing, and then the day before closing, oh, we can't close your loan because insert excuse here.
Right.
And it's all things I'm sure they could have easily taken care of had they been able to reach someone who could just talk this through with them.
Exactly. And I think the lack of immediate and personalized response is just a casualty mm-hmm. of a large platform. It's just not possible because the people on the other end there really are in a call center and they are driven by volume.
Mm-hmm.
People ask me all the time, my loan's not very big. I don't know if you want to do it. I have never even had a second thought about turning a loan down because it was too small. I mean, it, to whoever is borrowing the money, it's a big transaction.
Right.
It means a lot to them. That loan needs to be treated like it's a $1 million loan, even if it's a $50,000 loan, because it is always, a mortgage transaction is always the biggest single financial transaction we will ever probably do in our lives. And I find that's true for the very wealthy and people on the lower end too. It always represents a significantly large financial transaction. And what you want on the other end of that is a real person who can give you real responses in real time. And the loss of time and the loss of response, that can hurt when you got the moving van backed up to your house to mm-hmm. take all your furniture out, and all of a sudden you can't move into that new house that you expected to. So the mortgage banking platform, while large and certainly technologically driven, it has its own shortcomings that can leave the borrower feeling like they're stranded, feeling like they're not quite getting the information they need in a timely manner, and really where they were promised efficiency and quick loans. I guess quicken is quick. And yet there are some things about the mortgage process that really cannot be sped up. It just takes a certain amount of time to get an appraiser out and get an appraiser there and get it appraised. And then you find out what the issue is.
Right. There's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, there are. And title work. Dozens of issues can come up with title work. And even in the underwriting itself, the best documented files we have, Kerry, I would say 90% of them still come back with, hey, we need this other explanation, or we need this other document. Don't you think it's at least that higher percentage?
Oh, sure, yeah.
As good as we are, and we're as good as they come, right? But we still, I would say, only about 10% of the people on the first run-through, we get, hey, this thing's cleared to close. That just rarely, if ever, happens.
Right.
And it has to do with the complexity of documentation and the need to make sure, not only because someone's saying it so, but the need from a third party to show that it is so, is part of the slower process of the mortgage industry. So when we get back, we're going to go on full bias alert, and we're going to talk about the mortgage brokerage platform. Why we chose this platform 29 years ago, because I've had the opportunity to do it either way, and why we have held on to the mortgage broker platform. Join us after the break. Grab that second cup of coffee. We'll see you then. Thanks for joining us this morning. We're looking at the various platforms through which you can obtain a mortgage. We're looking at banks, mortgage banks, and the mortgage broker platform. And in our previous half of the show, we covered banks and mortgage banks. I do want to emphasize, we've laughed about it, but certainly banks are legitimate sources to get your mortgage, as are mortgage banking institutions. We feel like that there are probably some disadvantages with those compared to a broker platform. That's why we chose a broker platform, but that doesn't mean that your local banker is not the place to go. It just means that you might want to look at other options along the way, too. I especially like the smaller community banks that serve the community. As with any situation, it seems like the smaller you are, the more service you get. You don't become a number. At some point, every institution grows, and they have to implement kind of standardized practices. And that begins to kind of remove the human element from everything, and I think we all experience that. There are a few large corporations, in my experience, that seem to be able to maintain a sense of personal service. But quite often that gets lost along the way. Size is not always, and I've always said that even running my own business, that growth is probably one of the grand illusions in the United States of America. We associate growth with good, and yeah, if you're successful, you're going to grow. But I think every business reaches that crossing over point where you really have to make a decision. Do I want to go to the next growth level? And accept the fact that the fundamental nature of my business is going to change? Or do I want to retain, you know, what I started with? We had the opportunity. I wouldn't say that it was so much a choice as it was being forced by the crash of 07, because I had a much larger operation prior to 07. And in the crash, you know, I found myself back at my desk looking at a business that looked a lot like the day I started in 1989. And at first, I was a bit distressed by the loss of the volume and the size that the crash brought. But, you know, within a year, I thought, this is why I got in the business in the first place. I love it. I enjoy talking to people. I don't really want to manage 40 other loan officers. I am happy with the customers, meeting them face to face and doing what I started doing 30 years ago when I fell in love with the business anyway. So, growth is not all that is cracked up to be. But we want to talk about a mortgage broker platform. I think, Carrie, the best way to help someone understand what a mortgage broker does in the mortgage industry is to compare it to what an independent insurance agent does in the insurance business.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you got a State Farm agent. What's he going to sell everybody?
State Farm.
That's right. He ain't going to sell you Allstate, and he's not going to sell you Travelers. He's going to sell you one of the other insurance carriers because he's a captive agent. He works for the company, and obviously, for good reasons, he thinks he's at the best place, but he's only going to be able to quote you a State Farm policy. An independent insurance agent, on the other hand, may be able to quote from any number of different insurance sources. Well, you know, with more choices, usually, that's a good thing. Sometimes I go into a supermarket and think there's too many choices anymore. Like, I was buying Oreo cookies the other day. Good grief, I had no idea. I just thought, well, you either get the double stuff or the regular.
No, now you got lemon.
You got lemon, you got
colada.
Mint, you got white. And black, you know, it's unbelievable. There's like 40. So sometimes the number of choices is not good. For the most part, it is. So when you have an independent insurance agent, he may be able to quote a policy with an overall lower premium. He can adjust the coverage. He can put on little bells and whistles that you might need, insure other items that you may. So that's kind of what a mortgage broker does. Instead of having one lending source, now a mortgage bank and a bank, they are the lending source. So when you go to them, you have one outlet for your mortgage. When you come to a broker, you, depending on what the broker has structured, like in our case, we have, 25 lenders, 30
sure.
lenders?
Yeah.
And we can place a loan with any one of those lenders. Now, there are a number of advantages to that. I would say the overriding advantage from my standpoint, interfacing with a customer, is every day somebody wakes up at every bank and at every mortgage bank and at every lender, and they say, what will my rate be today? And they have to look out there across the spectrum of the market and say, we got to be competitive, but we can't lose money, so I'm going to set my rate here today. Well, if that rate is set by the person at the bank or the mortgage bank, that is what it is. On the other hand, when you come to our office and you say, okay, what's your mortgage rate today? Well, we're going to go out there and look at 25 different lenders. And so, generally speaking, although fixed-rate mortgages are fairly commodity products, meaning there's not a large difference top to bottom, there are rate differences. So one of the advantages to a broker platform with the multiple sources is just rate competitiveness. Breadth of programs. Carrie, what are the various programs we can book under? What can be out there?
You know, we've got conventional or conforming, the government programs, FHA, VA, USDA. We can do home equity conversion mortgage, better known as a reverse mortgage. And I'm sure I'm leaving some out. We can do pretty much everything.
Sure. And again, one of the huge advantages, even within the category that Carrie mentioned, conforming or what we call conventional loans, there are two outlets within that category. One is Fannie Mae and one is Freddie Mac. And there are distinctively different underwriting guidelines for those two entities. In some cases, they treat situations vastly different. The one that comes to mind, Carrie, the most is if we've got an occupant borrower and a non-occupant co-borrower, Fannie Mae still holds the occupant borrower to certain debt ratios, but Freddie Mac does not. So if you're a bank or a mortgage bank, you've got to choose your platform for conforming loans. You either go to Fannie Mae or you go to Freddie Mac. You don't go to both. And that might leave one lender unable to do your loan through a Fannie channel that may be very easily placed through a Freddie Mac channel. So as a broker, we cover both of those, as well as Carrie mentioned, all of the government sources for those. So we have multiple sources from which we derive rate and program advantages. We cover all of those. But Carrie, if we had to say the biggest advantage to a mortgage broker platform, what do you think that would be?
Well, the mortgage broker isn't lending his own money, so their risk assessment is completely different.
Okay. And I do think that at the crux of all differences, this is probably the one defining difference that makes all the difference in the mortgage broker versus the other platforms. And that is this: the mortgage broker is the facilitator of the transaction and not the lender. He is not the underwriter. Now, that will often be turned on the broker industry to say, well, why should I come to you? You're not even the lender. But that's because the person saying that, they don't have the final loan decision either. We don't have the final loan decision. Neither does the bank officer or the mortgage bank officer have a final decision. Everyone is going to go through underwriting. The question is, when you get to underwriting, are you going to have an advocate into the system? Are you going to have someone to argue on your behalf the strengths of your loan and address on your behalf the weaknesses of the loan? Or are you just sailing into that with no help? And I think that's the single biggest difference in the mortgage broker platform.
The best way to think of the mortgage broker is borrower advocate and lender liaison.
That
you don't even
good.
Have to deal with them. We take care of all that for you.
And we run a lot of interference, don't we, Kim?
Oh, we do, for sure.
And that means that even though you feel like we've asked for your blood and DNA, we actually already gave them your blood and DNA, but they just need a little bit more. And so we try to screen you from some of it. Wouldn't pretend to tell you that we can keep you from all of it, but you do have an advocate in the system. And this, the fundamental question, as we mentioned, of a lender is why should we not lend the money? That's risk assessment. The fundamental question of a mortgage broker is how do we get this loan done? And Carrie, that doesn't involve cheating. That doesn't involve
not at all.
Falsifying. That doesn't involve anything other than understanding the guidelines in which we work and structuring the loan in a manner in which it will meet the guidelines and get through the right channel. Sometimes that's a choice on the front end. Hey, we got to take this thing Freddie Mac. Sometimes that is along the way. We reach a snag, and that snag has potential resolution, and we're the ones there who say, how do we make this loan go? How do we get it through this blip? We're going to talk about some of the circumstances that can arise during the course of your mortgage loan, where having a mortgage broker on your side, in your pocket, as your advocate, can and will make all the difference in the world in the loan even being approved. So if we had to describe the relationship, and actually legally, the mortgage broker's relationship is legally described as fiduciary. And Carrie, for throw around big words, but what does that fiduciary relationship mean?
It just means that we legally represent the interests of the borrower in the transaction.
And that's an important distinction. Our contract, the required South Carolina contract, is a fiduciary contract. We take that very seriously. When a borrower walks in our door, they are our client. We represent them throughout the mortgage transaction. You ask us a question, the question will be answered and how it serves your best interest. Thanks again for being with us this morning. And for your early risers, we appreciate your listening in on the show. And we're talking about the mortgage bank platform of lending, the bank platform of lending. And in the last part of the show, we're talking about the mortgage broker platform. That's the one that we chose in the beginning, 29 years ago, when we went into the business. Carrie just reminded me that between Carrie and myself, we've got like 45 years of experience. That has a lot to do with why we get things done. the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac regulations are, what did you say, Carrie? Over 1,000 pages?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So if you want to sit down and familiarize yourself with those, feel free. If you don't, then just call us. And by the way, if you just want to talk through any scenario you've got or have any questions at all, reach out to me at 864-235-9596 or just email us anytime at what's our email address, Carrie?
TheMortgageMoment@gmail.com.
TheMortgageMoment@gmail.com. That's an easy one. I will say this, too, that someone's loss is always someone else's gain. And Carrie worked for a very, very large bank in their mortgage division, one of the larger mortgage divisions in the country, that happened to get totally eliminated and shut down. And before they did that, they had fully trained Carrie to be an underwriter. So when she came to work with me a number of years ago, I got a jewel. Because I didn't get someone who's just a loan processor. I got someone who knows what it's like to look at the risk, to assess the risk. And so what Carrie is so good at is preempting the issues that may arise during the course of the loan. And here's what we found. Not every loan is a perfect loan, and not every borrower is a perfect borrower. And so we all have weaknesses, strengths, that type thing. What we have learned is that the best way to get your loan approved is to take whatever weaknesses there may be, and we put them front and center.
Absolutely.
We show them right where the weakness is. And you know what that does? When you've solved that one, there is no longer any difficulty in the loan decision.
Mm-hmm.
So we address the weaknesses, and we address that by saying, okay, we recognize this particular item here represents a structural weakness to the loan. But, hey, look at this. Here's this, 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 and this. So this is the reason the loan should be made. So that's where our advocacy plays out in a practical, everyday manner. Your loan goes into an underwriter, really having already been underwritten by Carrie. And all potential issues, we don't wait for them to arise. The worst thing that can happen is for us to get surprised by something.
Mm-hmm.
And that occasionally happens. Our clients don't always tell us everything that
and,
they
and
should.
And it's usually not malicious.
Yeah,
they just think it's something we don't need to know.
Absolutely. And those are the difficult situations because we have to dig our way out. But when we know everything up front, remember, we work for you. We can't cheat the guidelines. We can't hide something. It's going to come out. Believe me, there's such a thorough underwriting process. Everything is going to come out. So when we know about it up front, what we can do is address that from the beginning. And we get quite a few loans made that have already been turned down at other places simply because no one looked at it in a balanced way. No one looked at it from the standpoint of how do we make this work, which is how we look at every loan, not why should we not do it. So a couple of advantages of the mortgage broker platform. We mentioned just the number of lenders so that rate is competitive, the number of lenders so that every program available is covered. But also with multiple lenders, we may have the experience that one lender doesn't quite see it our way, and you get turned down. But, hey, there are 24 others out mm-hmm. there. Now, if we get the same answer three times from three different lenders, we're pretty much going to say, hey, it's time to reset here, time to look at strengthening the weaknesses. We'll come back in 6 months. We'll come back in a year. We'll get it done. We'll tell you what to do to address those weaknesses. But in the meantime, many loans, one lender might have a problem with, another lender may have no problem at all. So we always have, you're not necessarily at a dead end if you get turned down. I want to address what I guess could be a distressing fact, but Carrie, I would say 20, 25% of our loans that we get back from underwriting, the underwriter has actually made a mistake.
Yeah.
Don't you see that quite often?
Quite often, yep.
And it may just be that they overlooked a document that was in the file.
Mm-hmm. Because, that's the biggest one.
Yeah, it usually is. We've already, you know, provided the document. It got shuffled off somewhere and they didn't see it. But sometimes we actually deal with underwriters who aren't really interpreting the guidelines correctly.
Happens all the time.
It does. And so if an underwriter makes a mistake or if an underwriter takes a position that we feel like is against the guidelines, well, we will paste the guideline back to them
mm-hmm.
and say, well, looky here. Freddie Mac says, yes, we can do this. And yes, this is legitimate. And so, again, you would have no way of having that kind of advocacy by dealing with a direct lender. But as a broker, remember, we legally represent you in the transaction. Our job is to get your loan done, and we are representing you to the underwriter. So you have that advocacy. We can get those initial turndowns quite often turned into approvals just simply by pointing up documentation that they missed, circumstances they may have missed. And, Carrie, you know, underwriting is a, I would say, maybe a little more of an art than a science.
Oh, yeah, it's very subjective.
It is. Guidelines are there, but they're not rigid.
Mm-hmm.
And so when a guideline can be stretched, that's legitimate. Again, it's not cheating. The guideline is still there, but the interpretation of that can make all the difference in the world. So we help the underwriters interpret, don't we,
mm-hmm.
quite often. Oftentimes, somebody will say, well, you know, I'd rather go to a bank. They're a lender. They can make a decision. You can't make a decision. And my response to that is, well, we have a tremendous number of tools at our disposal. The biggest tool we ever got was the automated underwriting system itself. And once we had that, Carrie, that was revolutionary. I remember we got it, like, I think 1996. And I was actually fearful at first that the computer was going to end up turning down more loans than it made. I really thought, oh, no, they're going to take the human underwriter out of this, and we're going to lose all flexibility. What we really found was that the automated system started making all the loans that we used to say to the underwriter, well, look at this. Why can't you make the loan? Look at this. They got $200,000 in the bank. Why don't you want to lend them $100,000, you know? So the automated systems are tremendous tools that we use up front. They identify any weaknesses. They address it. They tell us what documentation is required. And really, all lenders virtually default to the automated underwriting system as long as the information is accurate for their final decision. And although we don't have final decision making on the loan, what we do have is the ability to provide a loan narrative to the underwriter. And that loan narrative states what weaknesses are there, but offsets those weaknesses by addressing other compensating factors. In other words, okay, we've got a little bit of a marginal credit score here, but look, they got 6 months savings in the bank. They got six times their house payment in the bank. Or, yes, we know the debt ratios are slightly over the guidelines, but look at the credit score. This borrower obviously knows how to manage their credit. Or, hey, what are you worried about this house payment for being too high? They're paying more than that in rent.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of things that would normally go unsaid and unspoken and unrecorded in a borrower's loan file, but we make sure we cover all of those things. Carrie, let's talk about some other issues that could arise where a broker might be helpful. What other kind of issues do you see sitting in your seat as a loan processor?
Oh, you know, if we get a bad appraisal, it comes back, the value's lower than we thought it should be.
Yeah.
And you know for a fact that there were other sales right around the house you're buying or refinancing that sold for more than the appraised value.
Yeah, if you're at a lender, unfortunately, you're at a dead end. You don't have the means of appealing the appraisal. But actually, as a broker, we do have that capacity. Now, I will admit that the appraisal appeal process is both cumbersome and frustrating. And we don't get a lot of overturned appraisals, but sometimes we get them to order another one. Just mm-hmm. had one that way. Just had admittedly a difficult property to appraise. The lender ordered what's called a desk review, and the desk review kind of ripped the original appraisal to shreds, and then nobody could agree on anything. And so finally we said, well, let's just get another appraisal then. And so, you know, the other appraisal came in higher than the original one that they thought was bad.
Right.
So, you know, again, that's a solution-oriented, something that might reach a dead end if we're talking about a lender, because they would see that as risk. Well, why should I order another appraisal? I got this one, and it says it's not worth what they think it's worth, and so why should I go out on a limb to get another appraisal? But we don't look at it that way. We say, hey, we think there are legitimate reasons that this appraisal and this review, this desk review, are just shot full of holes. Let's get another one and go with it. What other things might come up during the course, Kerry, of a mortgage loan where we can be of an assistance to the borrower?
Title problems. There could be what are called clouds on title.
Yes, and we run across those. We can assist in getting those cleared up. Mainly, we can keep the panic button from being hit, because probably 99% of all title flaws can be fixed. Very, very few ever result in truly an unmarketable title. So we can be your assistant in that process. We can offer solutions. One thing that one place I find myself playing a significant role, Kerry, is kind of in the area of seller friction.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're kind of in a day now where buyers have their agent, sellers have their agent, and we're kind of sitting in the middle of all that. Our client is our borrower, but sometimes, let's say an appraiser comes up and says, hey, the roof needs to be repaired. And the seller says, doggone it, I'm taking bottom dollar on this. I'm not going to put a nickel in it. And so the seller's mad at the buyer's mad at the seller, nobody. Well, we can step into that. We can step into the situation and, number one, assure the seller, look, we know that you got to spend $500 on a roof, but here's the problem. If you don't do it now, you're going to have to do it anyway, because the next appraiser is going to see the same thing and they're going to say the same thing. Quite often, I call it, we just kind of alleviate some of the seller friction. Sometimes we need to restructure a deal so it works. Maybe the seller needs to participate in the closing costs because the borrower doesn't quite have enough money. Well, we can negotiate a higher price for where the seller pays some closing costs but comes out the same. And we can help in those situations. We help with general advice about property insurance. I've helped borrowers get property tax exemptions if they're disabled veterans. So our mortgage broker platform lets us be the advocate for you. Thanks for joining us this morning. See you next week.